Hey everyone, and welcome to another deep dive. We throw around this phrase, a good life, but what does it actually mean? Especially when it comes to our work.
Yeah.
It often feels like we're all on this treadmill, but what are we really chasing?
Right.
Today, we're going deep on how people around the world define quality of life, especially in relation to their work.
Absolutely.
We've got some fascinating stories lined up.
And what's so fascinating is that it's not just about finding the perfect work-life balance.
Right.
We'll see how it's shaped by cultural expectations, personal values, and even major life changes.
Like everyone's got their own recipe for the good life.
Yes.
And we're about to get a peek at their ingredients.
Precisely. And sometimes those ingredients are surprising. We'll see how anticipation can be a tool for stress management.
Oh, interesting.
How a cancer journey can redefine happiness.
Wow.
And how even a seemingly unsuccessful political campaign can be a catalyst for change.
Okay, I'm hooked already. Let's start with a couple in France, Alexandra and Celine. They're both figuring out this work-life balance thing, but their approaches are total opposites.
Yeah, really interesting dynamic there.
Alexandra is an osteopath who loves his job, but feels the pull towards a slower pace of life.
And it's not just a vague longing. He's actively creating space for things like gardening, meditation, and even CrossFit.
CrossFit. That doesn't exactly scream slower pace of life.
Right.
What's that about?
Well, for Alexandra, it's about pushing his boundaries.
Oh, okay.
He's realizing that achieving balance isn't just about relaxation, but also about challenging himself physically and mentally. It's about actively designing a life that feels fulfilling on multiple levels.
I like that. Sort of a growth mindset applied to his well-being.
Exactly.
So what about Celine? What's her approach?
Celine's taking a different kind of leap. She actually left a stable nursing career to become a consultant.
Wow. Talk about a big change. That takes guts.
Absolutely. And for her, it's about autonomy and control.
Makes sense.
She was craving more flexibility, more ownership over her work. Now she's navigating the uncertainty of self-employment.
Yeah.
But there's a real sense of purpose there.
It's like they've each found their own unique paths to fulfillment, even though they look totally different. And they support each other.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. There's this really touching moment in their conversation where Alexandra tells Celine, "Life is difficult for you, but it's beautiful." They recognize and respect each other's journeys, even if they don't always understand them fully.
It's a good reminder that finding your version of a good life isn't a solo mission. Having a supportive partner who gets you, even when your paths diverge, is invaluable.
Speaking of navigating life's ups and downs, our next deep dive takes us to Sylvie, also in France.
Okay.
She's found a rhythm with hybrid work, but her story goes way deeper than just finding the right work setup.
Oh, I love when the deep dives get really deep. What makes Sylvie's story stand out?
Sylvie's a cancer survivor.
Wow.
This experience drastically reshaped her definition of a good life.
That's a life changer for sure. Did she talk about how her perspective on work shifted?
Absolutely. Before cancer, her definition of happiness was more externally driven, focused on achieving goals, climbing the career ladder.
Right.
But afterwards, she realized that true happiness for her was about feeling safe and content with the ordinary.
Wow. It's amazing how facing our mortality can clarify what truly matters.
Right.
So Sylvie no longer cares about work at all.
Not exactly. She still values work, but it's no longer the center of her universe.
Yeah.
She prioritizes self-care, family, and community. She talked about how her morning runs are non-negotiable. It's her time to recharge, to connect with herself, and prioritize her well-being, both physically and mentally.
It's like cancer gave her this permission slip to live more intentionally, to focus on what brings her joy and a sense of peace.
Exactly. And it's a powerful reminder that we don't have to wait for a major life event to reevaluate our priorities. We can choose to prioritize our well-being and create space for those things that nourish us right here, right now.
So we've heard from two very different approaches to finding fulfillment in France. Now let's jump across the globe to South Korea, where we'll meet Natalie, who's mastered the art of anticipation.
And when we say mastered, we mean it. She uses anticipation almost like a superpower. It's more than just planning her day, though. That's part of it.
Okay.
Natalie uses anticipation to manage stress and stay grounded, even when life throws curveballs.
Okay, I'm intrigued. How does she actually do that?
Right.
It sounds almost counterintuitive, like, can you really anticipate the unexpected?
Exactly. That's the thing. It's not about predicting the future. It's about creating a sense of structure and intention,
right,
even amidst uncertainty.
So give me an example. How does Natalie apply this in her daily life?
Well, imagine this. Natalie's cousin decides to visit Seoul. which is exciting.
Okay.
But instead of just going with the flow, Natalie uses anticipation to minimize potential stress.
Okay.
She plans out their itinerary in advance, mapping out transportation, activities, even mealtimes.
Okay. So she's super organized. I can see how that would help her feel more in control.
Right.
But what about those inevitable travel hiccups?
Yeah.
Delayed flights, sudden changes of plan.
Right, right.
You know, the things you can't really anticipate.
That's where her real anticipation muscle comes in.
Okay.
Because she's already thought through the logistics and potential pain points, she's way better equipped to handle those unexpected disruptions. It's not about being rigid, but about having a framework that allows for flexibility and adaptation.
So it's like she's one step ahead of the game. She's not caught off guard because she's already mentally prepared for those possibilities. I can see how that would be incredibly empowering.
Exactly. And it's something we can all incorporate into our lives,
right,
whether we're navigating a busy work week or planning a trip abroad.
It's like that old adage, hope for the best, prepare for the worst, but with a proactive twist.
Precisely.
Yeah.
It's about taking charge of our emotional responses to the unexpected.
Yeah.
And Natalie's story shows us that it's a skill that can be learned and honed.
It makes you wonder if anticipation is the secret ingredient to a good life.
Yeah.
Or at least a less stressful one.
For sure.
But speaking of navigating challenges, let's shift gears and talk about Ismar in Brazil.
Okay.
He took a huge leap of faith by running for city council.
And his story is a powerful reminder that a good life isn't always about personal comfort or achievement. Sometimes it's about having the courage to stand up for what you believe in, even when the odds are stacked against you.
So tell me more about Ismar. What motivated him to enter the world of politics?
Well, he's a retired Air Force officer.
Okay.
So he's no stranger to discipline and a strong sense of duty. But what drove him to run for office was his deep concern about corruption in Brazil.
Makes sense.
He saw it as a major obstacle to progress and wanted to be a part of the solution.
So he's not a career politician. It sounds like he was driven by a genuine desire to make a difference.
Absolutely. And what's fascinating is that he chose to run with the Novo Party, a relatively new party in Brazil that has a very specific and, some might say, radical approach to campaigning.
Okay, I'm listening. What makes him so different?
They completely refuse to use public funds for their campaigns.
Wow, that's a bold move. Talk about putting your money where your mouth is.
Yeah.
But practically speaking, how do they even run a campaign without funding?
It's definitely an uphill battle. They rely heavily on individual donations and volunteer work. It's a testament to their commitment to their ideals, but it also puts them at a significant disadvantage in a system where money often talks.
It makes you wonder about the trade-offs we make in pursuit of a good life. Or in this case, a better society. Ismar is willing to sacrifice the advantages of traditional campaigning to stay true to his principles.
And that tension between idealism and pragmatism is something that comes up again and again in his story.
Yeah.
He's deeply committed to fighting corruption, but he's also realistic about the challenges he faces, especially as a first-time candidate running against a former mayor.
So how did Election Day go for him? Did he win?
Well, he went into it with his eyes wide open, knowing that victory was a long shot. He actually spent the day with his family lunch with his mother, a visit to his aunt, almost as if it were a normal Sunday.
That sounds almost surreal, given the circumstances, like trying to find a sense of normalcy amidst this huge life event.
Exactly. But of course, the weight of the election was always there in the back of his mind.
Right.
He even described the moment he went into the voting booth and cast his vote for himself as unusual and special.
I bet. So what happened when the results came in?
Well, out of the over 3,000 votes needed to win, Ismar received 53.
Oh, wow. That's rough.
It was definitely a blow, even though he had prepared himself for the possibility of losing.
Mm-hmm.
But here's where Ismar's story takes a really interesting turn.
Okay, I'm listening.
He had this conversation with Frank, a leader in the Brita community, a few days after the election.
Mm-hmm.
Ismar was grappling with the results, questioning whether all the effort was worth it. Had he made any real difference? Was it even possible to change a system so entrenched in corruption?
That's a question a lot of us wrestle with, not just in politics, but in any field where we're trying to create positive change. It's easy to feel discouraged, especially when the results aren't immediately visible.
Absolutely. But Frank offered a different perspective, one that I think is incredibly insightful. He reminded Ismar that running for office, challenging the status quo, even if you don't win, is still a form of success.
It's about planting seeds, even if you don't get to see them grow.
Exactly. And it's not just about the election itself. It's about inspiring others, about showing people that there's another way, a better way, even if it's harder, even if it means going against the grain.
So it's about the ripple effect. Ismar's willingness to stand up for his beliefs might inspire someone else to do the same, and so on.
Precisely. And Frank had this really interesting analogy. He told Ismar, you know how behind every successful husband, there's an ambitious woman.
Okay, I'm not sure I follow.
He was suggesting that Ismar can be that ambitious woman behind the successful husband, which in this case is the Novo Party.
I love that. Even if Ismar isn't in office himself, he can still play a vital role in pushing for the changes he believes in.
Exactly. And that's where the idea of a good life becomes so multifaceted. It's not just about individual achievement, but also about contributing to something larger than ourselves.
It's about finding meaning and purpose in the collective effort, even when the path is challenging. But, you know, listening to Ismar's story got me thinking about something else he mentioned, that sense of people being afraid to speak their minds.
Right.
To go against the grain.
It's a fascinating paradox, isn't it?
Yeah.
On the one hand, we have these platforms for sharing our thoughts and opinions more widely than ever before. But on the other hand, there's this growing pressure to conform, to silence dissenting voices, especially when it comes to challenging those in power.
It's like everyone's walking this tightrope, you know, between wanting to fit in and wanting to speak their truth.
Right. Exactly. And for some, like Ismar, the desire to make a difference outweighs the fear of standing out.
It takes guts to challenge the status quo, especially when you're up against a system that's been in place for a long time.
It does. But as we've seen throughout this deep dive, those acts of courage, even on a small scale, can have a ripple effect, inspiring others to question, challenge, and ultimately create change.
It's a good reminder that a good life isn't just about seeking comfort and security.
Mm-hmm.
It's also about having the courage to stand up for what you believe in, even when it's uncomfortable, even when the outcome is uncertain.
Absolutely. And speaking of navigating uncertainty, let's head over to Bangalore, India, where we'll meet Ritesh, a young professional who's grappling with some pretty big questions about work, family, and what it means to create a fulfilling life in a rapidly changing world.
Oh, I'm ready for another deep dive. Tell me about Ritesh.
Yeah.
What's his story?
Ritesh is 29 years old and killing it professionally. He's living the dream in many ways, successful career in Bangalore, a city that's buzzing with opportunity.
Right.
But amidst all this outward success, he's wrestling with this feeling of, is this it?
I think a lot of us, especially in this age of hustle and constant achievement, can relate to that feeling.
Yeah.
Like we work so hard to reach a certain level of success.
Yeah.
But then we find ourselves wondering what's next, or even if it was all worth it in the first place.
Exactly. And for Ritesh, this questioning is amplified by the fact that he's caught between two worlds, his traditional upbringing in his village, where family and community are paramount, and his fast-paced, individualistic life in Bangalore.
It's like he's straddling these two very different cultures, trying to reconcile the values and expectations of each.
Precisely. And this tension is particularly evident in his relationship with his family. He feels this pull to be closer to his parents, who still live in his village, but he also feels this pressure to succeed, to climb the corporate ladder, which often means long hours, and being physically distant from his loved ones.
It's a classic dilemma, isn't it? Balancing our own aspirations with the expectations and needs of our families.
Yeah.
It's something that so many people, regardless of where they live or what they do, can relate to.
Absolutely. And Ritesh's story really highlights how this tension is heightened in a culture where work-life balance is often more of an aspiration than a reality.
Right.
He talks about how companies, particularly in the tech industry, have created this environment where being always on is not only expected, it's rewarded.
It's like the lines between work and personal life have become so blurred that it's almost impossible to separate the two.
Exactly. And Ritesh even shares a personal anecdote about this. He talks about how he started spending weekends at the office.
Oh, really?
Initially drawn in by the perks, free food, gyms, you name it, but it quickly became this unspoken expectation.
Wow.
If you weren't there putting in the extra hours, you were seen as less committed, less ambitious.
Wow. That's a slippery slope.
Yeah.
It's like, how do you even begin to set boundaries when the very culture you're in promotes this kind of always on mentality?
It's a huge challenge and one that Ritesh is still grappling with. He recognizes the need for boundaries, for prioritizing his well-being and his relationships.
Yeah.
But it's a constant negotiation, especially within a company culture that doesn't necessarily support those values.
It sounds exhausting, to be honest. Like you're constantly fighting against the current.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, what strikes me about Ritesh's story is that he's not just passively accepting this situation. He's actively questioning it.
Right.
Trying to find a better way.
Exactly. And that's what's so inspiring about his story. Even though he's facing these very real challenges, he's not giving up.
Yeah.
He's committed to finding a way to live a good life,
mm.
one that encompasses both his professional aspirations and his deep-seated values of family and connection.
And this search for balance is even more complicated by the fact that he's about to navigate another major life transition,
mm.
marriage. And he's choosing to go against the grain in this area, too, opting for a love marriage rather than the traditional arranged marriage.
And it's fascinating how this decision reflects those broader tensions he's facing.
Right.
Between individual desire and societal expectations.
Mm.
He wants to find a partner who aligns with his values.
Yeah.
Someone who understands and supports his desire for a more balanced life.
Right.
But he's also aware of the cultural and familial pressures to conform to tradition.
It's like this one decision, this very personal choice, becomes a microcosm of all these larger forces at play. Individualism versus collectivism, tradition versus modernity, ambition versus contentment.
Precisely. And Ritesh's story reminds us that there's no one-size-fits-all answer to the question of what makes a good life.
Yeah.
It's an ongoing journey of exploration, negotiation, mm-hmm. and ultimately defining success on our own terms.
And sometimes it's about having the courage to choose a different path, even if it means deviating from the norm.
Yeah.
Even if it means challenging the status quo.
And as we wrap up this deep dive into the multifaceted world of what constitutes a good life.
Right.
I think it's worth reflecting on the incredible diversity of experiences we've encountered.
We've traveled from France to South Korea to Brazil and India.
It's been quite a journey.
It has. And while each individual's journey has been unique,
right.
there have been these incredible threads of shared humanity woven throughout.
That longing for connection, for purpose, for a sense of belonging, it seems to transcend cultural boundaries and economic differences.
And what I'm left with is this sense of hope.
Mm.
Hope that even in a world that often feels chaotic and uncertain,
yeah.
there are people out there, like the ones we've met today,
yeah.
who are actively creating lives of meaning and fulfillment.
Absolutely.
Lives that are grounded in intentionality.
Yes.
In a willingness to challenge the status quo and in a deep appreciation for those small, everyday moments of joy and connection.
Those are the moments that matter.
Those are the moments.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a beautiful note to end on. So to all our deep divers out there.
Yes.
Keep exploring, keep questioning, keep seeking out those moments of beauty and connection.
Love it.
Until next time, keep living your good life, whatever that may look like for you.